Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond reading with you today the Decatur Herald and Review, dated March 8, 2016. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with an article entitled Sparring for Mind and Spirit. Martial Arts Program Gives Decatur Students Supportive Atmosphere. And this was written by Valerie Wells. Dontre Williams is one tough kid. The 10-year-old tested for and was awarded his advanced white belt on Saturday, which requires more than 2 hours of demonstrating skills, and in the process took a hit to the nose, which broke it. On Monday, he was at Stephen Decatur Middle School wearing his Taekwondo Dobak, sparring and working out alongside the other students in that class, wearing his new belt, and he said his nose doesn't hurt at all. He rarely misses a class and is one of the most dedicated students. He took the hit like a man, said Will Pitts, who teaches 7th grade history at Stephen Decatur, and started the class for Decatur School District students in November, thanks to a grant from the Decatur Public Schools Foundation. Class meets 5 days a week after school. Pitts and his fellow teacher, Ben West, who teaches band at Garfield Montessori School, have studied martial arts together at De La Rosa Martial Arts for several years and came up with the idea to offer a class at no cost to Decatur students. Their teacher, Lisa De La Rosa, gave her blessing for them to teach and provides advice and assistance. This is for the kids who don't fit into traditional sports, Pitts said. Not everybody's going to play football or basketball. Martial arts provides them with training for body, mind, and spirit, he said, and a supportive atmosphere with adults who care about them and can act as role models. Kids from throughout the district are invited, and there is room for more, he said. The classes are free, with families responsible only for the kids' uniforms and protective gear. Because many students in the district come from low-income families, paying for classes at a traditional school of martial arts would be out of reach. In addition, Pitt said, some of the kids in his class would go home to an empty house and nothing to do, instead of a ready-made group of friends and a constructive activity. Nichelle Gavin's two kids, Tara and Jaden, both participate in the class. Tara has autism, and Gavin said she was told that martial arts can improve focus and discipline, as well as physical fitness. Another plus for her is that it's an activity that both children can participate in together. Tara wears headphones to cut down on distractions and gets out there on the mat and spars with other kids and with her instructors with the best of them. Gavin said she can see a difference in her daughter already, including her grades. She got all A's on her last report card, Gavin said. That's the first time she's ever done that. Michael Garman, 6, is one of the few kids who gives the class martial arts yell whenever he throws a kick and is a fireball on the mat. He has wanted to learn martial arts since he could walk, said his mother, Kathy Garman. She had him enrolled in another class, but when she heard about this one and that it was free, she moved him to it. He's made a lot of friends, she said. By contrast, 15-year-old Irma Porter, who holds a green belt, never makes a sound when she's sparring. As an older, more experienced student, the MacArthur High School student helps demonstrate techniques to the younger ones. She's been studying martial arts for 3 or 4 years. I go for the silent intimidation, she said with a chuckle. There are a couple of photographs associated with this article. One shows language arts teacher Lisa Holmes, who is sparring with a student during a Decatur martial arts class at the middle school. And another shows a child, Amaya Jones, and Jaden Gavin, throwing medicine balls upward during warm-ups for their martial arts class. In other local news, we find this article on page 3. Council sells land to Northeast Community Fund. And this was written by Allison Petty. The dateline is Decatur. The Northeast Community Fund is bound for a new home near Wabash Crossing, with other social services potentially set to follow. The Decatur City Council voted Monday to sell roughly 3 acres to the nonprofit organization for $650. The Northeast Community Fund provides food and financial assistance to thousands of people annually. And Director Jerry Pelz said its home at 825 North Water Street has grown cramped. The organization plans to build a new facility that would span roughly 20,000 square feet, more than double the size of the 8,000 square feet it now occupies. Currently, the space doesn't provide privacy for some confidential conversations that need to take place with clients, Peltz said. In light of this proposed gift of land and looking forward to building, we hope to be able to serve this community for many years to come, Peltz told the council. The site is located in the 400 to 500 blocks of East King Street and East Central Avenue and the 800 block of North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. Crossing Healthcare opened a new facility nearby in September, another move that was facilitated by the council's sale of land in 2014. Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus said the development of the healthcare facility created new interest in the area, which city officials hope to turn into a social services campus. I think you're going to see a number of exciting proposed projects come forward in the next couple of years, he said. In addition to food, the Northeast Community Fund provides clothing and household items, furniture referrals, help with utility bills and prescriptions, and a microfinance program that helps people break away from high-interest payday loans. The new site would be more accessible for delivery trucks and provide more storage space for dry goods as well as cold products, according to the council memo. In other business, the council approved funding to repair a bridge that carries Mound Road over Spring Creek. The estimated $915,000 cost of construction would be split, with $732,000 covered by federal funds and a remaining $200,000 from state motor fuel tax proceeds. Construction is slated to begin later this spring and wrap up by the end of 2016. Also in local news is this headline, Family Rules Partners Salute by Valerie Wells. Beth Nolan choked up during her speech about her mother's influence on her life. After making a joke at the Partners in Education Partners Salute on Monday that writing her speech about honoree Wedgie Stewart felt like writing her eulogy, Nolan made another about how difficult it was to talk about Stewart without more tears. "My mother taught her children lots of lessons, but nothing that was discussed at the dinner table in words," Nolan said. "The theme was always service. She taught us in her actions, in her career choices, and in her volunteer time. To quote the founder of Methodism, John Wesley, do all the good you can in all the ways that you can for as long as you can." Stewart is the president of Decatur Community Foundation, and her career has largely been devoted to promoting education in positions with the Richland Community College Foundation, the Decatur Memorial Hospital Foundation, and other endeavors. Longtime friend Shelleth Hansbrough said she and Stewart connected immediately when they met and have stayed friends through many job changes in both their lives. "She used to joke around that she couldn't hold a job," Hansbrough said, "but it just meant that she was not afraid to try new things." Hansbrough urged the high school students at the luncheon to make friends outside their age group as she had, because a more mature friend can offer wisdom and guidance not available from someone their own age. Stewart agreed, and her message to the adults in the room was to provide inspiration to younger generations. "These young people are watching us, whether they'll admit it or not," she said. Stewart and Nolan also urged the young people to go ahead and move away for their educations, but to come home afterward and bring their ideas and energy back to Decatur and Macon County. The outstanding business honoree is Consociate Danzig, still a family business, whose connection with Partners in Education has been strong for years. Educator of the Year honors went to Melissa Downs, school counselor at Garfield Montessori School. Downs studied graphic design and elementary education in college, and when she had to make a career choice, she took her creativity to the classroom. One of her most cherished goals is to show her students what they need to do now to prepare for the workforce. She holds an annual career cafe in which her 7th and 8th grade students interview adults about their careers and the qualifications required for them. And adults come to the school during lunch to speak so that kids don't lose any class time. "I want to thank my parents for teaching me the value of hard work," Down said. "I also need to call out my dad for always preaching, 5 minutes early is 5 minutes late." Another article of local interest is this one. Mount Zion now require special permit for B&B, bees, spelled B-E-E-S. This was written by Ryan Voiles. Mount Zion Village Board took care of the bees on Monday night. Bed and breakfast and bees, B-E-E-S. Those who wish to operate a bed and breakfast or do beekeeping within the village limits will now have to have a special use permit after the board unanimously approved the plans during its regular meeting. Those who wish to operate either endeavor would need the approval of village's planning commission and its full board. Village Administrator Julie Miller said both issues have surfaced over the past year and that a plan should be in place. Quoting Julie, "We think neighbors need to know what's going on before the person asking starts putting money into the projects. Beekeepers are already regulated in Illinois under the Bees and Apiaries Act. Those local municipalities can determine whether to regulate or even ban the practice. The beekeeper resolution, approved by the village board, includes a grandfather clause, and those who operated as beekeepers before Monday night would not feel need to acquire a special use permit." Miller emphasized the resolution was not meant to deter anyone from keeping bees, but to regulate potential beekeeping in concentrated residential areas where issues could arise, such as another resident having an allergic reaction to bee stings. In regard to the bed and breakfast, Miller said there were conversations a few months ago that fell through with a group that wanted to open one in Mount Zion. That discussion led her to consider putting something on the books that could better regulate where one could be located and potential capacity. "We want to keep the integrity of the neighborhoods intact," Miller said, referring to potential issues such as parking. In other business, the village will factor in an additional $5,000 into its next budget to cover the cost of participating in a special recreation district, which provides programs for children and adults with disabilities and includes assisting participants with Special Olympic events. Mount Zion has been a part of the district along with the Decatur Park District and the Village of Forsyth since 1996. But Miller said they had never paid to be part of the district. A few months ago, the Decatur Park District approached and asked them to contribute financially to the program. If the board does not participate in the program, it would be required to provide, quote, reasonable accommodations for children and adults with special needs who wish to participate in recreational programs. The village does not currently have trained staff, and Miller said they would have to hire a third party to provide the services. That alone would not only be difficult, but could be more expensive than the current program, Miller said. Glancing at the local briefs column, we find these brief articles of local interest. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville, will host three toolshed talks in Macon, Christian, and Jersey counties. The agriculture-related discussions will include representatives from each county's Farm Bureau. The Macon County event is today at 7890 Greenswitch Road in Oriana. The Christian County event is Friday, March 11th in Morrisonville, and the Jersey County event is Monday, March 14th in Brighton. Next, we have this watershed funding eyed, and this is Headline Decatur. Funding will be offered in Macon County through the U.S. Department of Agriculture National Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS, for a Sangamon River Watershed Project. The NRCS has partnered with the Macon County Soil and Water Conservation District to help producers address concerns such as degraded water quality and soil erosions. Producers can apply for assistance through the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, or EQIP, to implement practices such as drainage, drainage water management, denitrifying bioreactors, cover crop, nutrient management, and no-till. Application deadlines are Friday, March 18th and May 20th, but applications are accepted throughout the year. For information, contact the Decatur Field Office by calling 877-5670. And this from Eureka. The president of Ronald Reagan's alma mater said the Illinois school will have a public memorial for Nancy Reagan. Eureka College President David Arnold called the late First Lady a terrific woman. Ronald Reagan graduated from Eureka College in 1932. Nancy Reagan visited the college seven times between 1967 and 1992. Later in her life, college officials went to visit her in California. Arnold presented her with an honorary Doctor of Humane Letters degree at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in California in April 2009. Nancy Reagan died on Sunday at age 94. And finally, this from South Jacksonville. A funeral will be Wednesday for a Central Illinois police officer who was killed when his squad car and an ambulance collided. A visitation for South Jacksonville Village Police Officer Scott Fitzgerald will be today at the First Christian Church in South Jacksonville. His funeral will be Wednesday at the church, followed by burial at Murrayville City Cemetery. Officials say Fitzgerald was responding to a call around 9 p.m. Friday on Illinois 267 and made a U-turn while trying to find the accident site. While making the turn, his car struck an ambulance responding to the same emergency. Three people in the ambulance were hurt. We turn now to our advice columnist, beginning with this letter to Abby. Dear Abby, I need some relationship advice. How do you handle household expenses with a partner? My boyfriend and I have been in a relationship for 10 years. In all this time, he has never once split any of the expenses with me. I pay for everything. He does buy groceries, although not all of them. He also helps around the house and with my daughter. If I bring up the issue of sharing expenses, it turns into a fight. He says he's sorry he doesn't make enough money. Then he says, all that matters to me is money, and threatens to move out. I feel completely taken advantage of because he does have the money to make $300 plus monthly payments for his new boat that's sitting in my garage. To me, it's all about priorities. I would like a new car, but I have other monthly bills to pay. Is it just me, or is this unfair? Signed, Up to Here With It in South Dakota. Dear Up to Here, it's not just you. You've been carrying the lion's share of the load. But unless you are finally ready to insist upon a new arrangement with this man who has had it pretty good for the last 10 years, nothing will change. It's time to ask yourself whether what he does contributes on every level is enough to satisfy you. If it isn't, be prepared to tell him you need to find an equal partner. And if he's unwilling to be that person, he should move. Here's the next article. Dear Abby, or the next letter, 4 years ago I had major affection for a man. We talked every chance we could. We arranged times we could sit together and just talk. There was lots of flirting, eye contact, and this overwhelming feeling of bliss, butterflies in the stomach, all of that. The problem was he was married. Once I realized it, I was devastated because I understood what I wanted could never be. I feel so lost. I'm now considering going to counseling. I still hear from others that he mentions me or says he misses me, but this is old news. Now there's someone else and it's the same problem, just a different setting. I feel so guilty for crushing an unattainable man. What's wrong with me? Why can't I like somebody who is available? I've liked guys my own age before and ones who were single, but there's something exciting about older, unavailable men. I don't want to feel this way, but I know that when I try to fight these feelings, they just become stronger. I won't act on them, but I wish I could change them. How can I? Signed, Feeling Guilty in Ohio. Dear Feeling Guilty, the quickest way to do that would be to talk about these feelings with a licensed mental health professional. When you do, be prepared to touch on all of your relationships with men, including your father, who is usually the first unattainable man with whom a little girl falls in love. I am pretty sure you will find that conversation illuminating. Once you understand your feelings, it may be easier for you to find a man who is truly available. If a relationship beyond a mad flirtation is what you really want, that is. The Tribune News Service offers this brief article, Same-Sex Adoption Backed, and the dateline is Washington. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled Monday that states must honor adoptions by same-sex parents who move across state lines. Citing the Constitution's Full Faith and Credit Clause, the justices in a unanimous opinion rebuked the Alabama Supreme Court for denying a lesbian's right to visit the three children she had adopted and raised with her former partner in Georgia. Last year, a divided Supreme Court said same-sex couples had a constitutional right to marry in every state. But to the surprise of gay rights advocates, the Alabama Supreme Court, led by Chief Justice Roy Moore, said in September that the woman's adoption decree from Georgia was void and would not be honored. Without bothering to hear arguments, the justices, that would be the Supreme Court justices, reversed the Alabama Supreme Court in an opinion that spoke for the full court. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated March 8, 2016. Please stay tuned.